Well, we've got one more regular Inuyasha thing to watch before we dive into the final act next week.
Yes.
And it is the final movie for us to watch.
Yep.
The fourth featured film.
Yep.
Yes, that's what we're talking about here today on Jared Now Watch Inuyasha's episode. What is this episode? I forget already. 171. I'm Jared, joined as always by Doc Al and Lady M.
Hello.
We are discussing Inuyasha the movie for Fire on the Mystic Island.
Yep.
This film came out on December 23rd, 2004 in Japan. A couple months after the final episode of Inuyasha aired. It was released in America on August 1st, 2006. And yeah, this was the final bit of media before the OVA and before the final act was released, and they finally finished off the Inuyasha.
Yes, and I never saw this movie, so this was my first time seeing it.
Well, are you glad you've seen it now?
I can think of several ways I would have rather have spent my time than watching this movie, but at least I got to hang out with you, so it could be worse, right?
True.
I didn't have to watch it by myself.
It could be worse. Yeah, that's also true. Oh boy. Yeah, this film is not great. I mean, to be fair, I don't think any of the films have been great per se.
No.
That's just the thing you're going to get when you have these non-canonical films that they kind of have to like shoehorn new enemies and stuff into a story and, you know, do all that fun stuff. This film is basically just Inuyasha gets the crap kicked out of him for an hour and 20 minutes, and then by the end of it, he's finally able to do something and win. That's kind of just it.
I'm not used to seeing him just get obliterated as much as he did in this.
Especially at this point in the series where, like, you know, he's got all these, like, new abilities and all these new techniques and attacks that, like, he should just be able to just, like, destroy everyone in this film. But, like, I guess that wouldn't be a way to make a feature-length film, and it would, you know, we would just be watching an episode of Inuyasha at that point, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, also you made mention that this felt like a Band of Seven retread, except, you know, we only have four people this time, but yeah, just here's a bunch of dudes again, and now we gotta take care of them. Basically the whole gist of this film.
Yep.
Oh boy.
Uh-oh.
What?
I just heard something fall.
Oh no. Kitties are dangerous. Dangerous kitties.
You are dangerous kitties.
Yeah.
Let me just make sure that no one's dead.
Let's hope that's not the case.
Kitties?
Kitties. Secret to kitties.
Sorry, doing a wellness check. All right, there's one. There's the other. Okay, we're good.
Success.
Continue on.
This whole film is based around this island named Horai Island. There's a bunch of half-demons who are living there because that's where they had lived previously, because that was a place where you could have, like, humans and demons interact and everything was fine and dandy.
No one was discriminating.
But they had to, like, hide themselves because, you know, they realized the outside world would not be too keen on that. Then, like, every 50 years or something, demons would come and try and attack it. And at one point, the four war gods showed up and basically took over the island and enslaved most of the half-demons there with a mark on their back where they cannot leave the island if they have the mark on them. At some point as well, Inuyasha and Sesshomaru both got the mark of the war gods as well at some point. You know, very convenient that we didn't know about this until now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the group finds out about this island, and then they have to go to the island to defeat the war gods after one of the half-demon gals, Ai, escapes the island and runs into Inuyasha and remembers who he was from 50 years ago because he was there with Kikyo at one point.
Of course he was.
But yeah, that's basically the gist of this whole movie, and then Inuyasha and the gang head there. Sesshomaru ends up there very briefly. Kikyo shows up just to tell Inuyasha he's very stupid and just leave a plot convenient device as right? well. And that's literally her whole time in this movie.
Yep.
It definitely has the feel of, you know, just things we have seen already in the series. So, like, it's nothing really new and out there in terms of, you know, enemies or story or anything. So,
yeah, I mean, we get, like, elemental enemies. We get people who remembered Inuyasha, Kikyo just showing up for whatever reason. We get Kikyo clones again. Again, for why, I don't know. And even then, like, that clone is basically, like, nothing happens.
Also, somehow, even though it's a clone, she's able to, like, beat up Inuyasha, and then he can't, when he gets, like, on the offensive at one time, he's like, I can't do it, I can't kill her! Which is very dumb.
Which is when Inuyasha, or when Kikyo calls him stupid.
Which is, that's the best part, that's maybe the best thing she has done in this entire series.
Yeah. Honestly, yes.
Show up, call Inuyasha dumb, leave.
But also making sure that there is some kind of plot relevance she has before she
it's
leaves.
It's so dumb that she's just like, oh, I'm just going to leave my bow and arrow right here.
Like, and why leave. Why would she ever do that?
It's so stupid. It literally is just a plot device so Kagome can have a bow and arrow later on in the film.
Yeah, it just feels like they always try and make it seem like Kikyo's, like, clairvoyant or, like, knows what's going to happen and everything. It's like, how would she know what's going to happen here? Like, it's stupid.
It's very dumb. Yeah, the enemies, the four war gods, are basically the four celestial animals. Mm-hmm. We got the dragon, the phoenix, the tiger, and the tortoise. Turtle house. Which, again, is something we've already done.
Yep.
This is the second time they've pulled out this trope.
Yep.
The first time they did it was the demon ninja.
Ooh.
Which they were in, like, episode 137-ish. But yeah, we've done this already. We've already done this. This is nothing new.
Now we just have half demon children and an island and Sango actually, like, getting to do some stuff.
They were very useful in this. Moroku uses the wind tunnel a lot. They defeat one of the four war gods by themselves.
Yeah.
So, like, they're...
He gets to use it a lot until they're poisonous insects again.
How convenient. But not the bees. Just the different bees. Poisonous insects.
But yeah, they were, you know, I was proud of them. They did their work.
They didn't have to rely on Inuyasha this time. It was very nice. Sesshomaru kills one of them. He kills the fire dude. Because they had beef from way back when as well. So he's just like, I'm just going to get you and you're done.
He felt useless in this movie.
Who?
Sesshomaru.
Yes. He was kind of just there, like, to have a fight and then just leave.
Yeah, it's like, why are you here? Like, he's even on the cover, like, he does something big, and he does defeat a guy, but...
I mean, Kikyo is also on the cover as well. She does not do anything in this film except for show up for 30 seconds.
Okay, true.
So.
True. You make a solid point. Also, the like, weird, like, here's this box that you need to defeat them. I'm going to give it to you instead of leaving it in this cavern they can't access anyway, and nobody should ever open it. Oops. Uh-oh. It's open. It's like, why did you give it to him, you dummy?
Not smart.
Ugh.
We see some very weird... There's also the part where Inuyasha twice uses the backlash wave in ways that doesn't make sense.
Right.
Which,
they're not ways that works.
No. But, I mean, it was interesting to see him use that technique for once, because I feel like he hasn't used it in a long time.
Right. I'm trying to remember the last time he used it. Was it with the Band of Seven, maybe?
Maybe.
Because that's how he took one of them out.
But it's also interesting that, like, this is the technique that he uses twice to, like, kill people when, like, mm-hmm. he just got the adamant barrage and, like, he uses it once in this film just to blow up a door. That's it. Which is like, what's the point? Also, there's the whole thing about, like, the box having, like, a barrier around it. And was it the whole thing about him getting the powered up Tetsuya that he could destroy any barrier?
Yes.
And then now he's unable to defeat this barrier that's just around a tiny box.
Yep. And Kagome can't really do, well, I guess she can open it, but she can't do anything to defeat it. I don't know, man. This entire, and then there was those, like, two grumpy dudes, little boys.
The twins?
Yeah, that, like, the whole time they're just like, man, you suck. You're terrible at this. What are you doing? Which, I mean, to be fair, Inuyasha was getting his ass kicked the whole time. So, true. Like, kind of valid to be like, dude, what are you doing? But it got a little old after a while.
It was basically like, let's just take Shippo's shtick. And make it with two people instead of one and just constantly make that their whole personality.
Oh, that reminds me. The voice direction in this was rough at times.
Uh-huh.
There were some characters that were like, oh no, we need to go do this thing. It's like, are you Kohaku? What's happening here?
That's where they learned all their direction was from... from him.
Yeah, this movie wasn't good.
We got the whole, like, the thing at the end where, like, they've defeated all the war gods and then they just somehow fuse together into one giant war god that's supposed to be even more powerful, but then Inuyasha just defeats it pretty easily with the help of Kagome, where they use the
backlash wave arrow technique.
Very much no, that move doesn't that count, that's not canonical.
I love that the person on the wiki was so mad about that last time.
So mad.
Are they mad about it this time?
We'll get to it, I guess, and we'll see if they are or not. But yeah, that's the way they defeat the big baddie, and then the island starts to disappear, and they got to get the kids off the island, and everyone just is all hunky-dory. The kids, they go to Kaede's village to hang out, and then the kids go their separate ways because we got to write these kids off somehow. Because they're like, never going to come back.
They're letting these children just, like, go on their own. What the hell?
I figured as well, like, you know, because, like, you have the postcard scene with that, and then, like, the gang's like, we got to keep going on our adventure. Like, I figured it would just be like, all right, let's go keep trying to find Naraku. But it's like, there's no mention of him at all in this film. It's just...
Nope.
This is just a weird side adventure we go on at some point in the midst of all of this, I guess.
Yeah, it was wild.
But yeah.
Choices were made.
Yeah, again, you know, we've watched all four movies now. Like a lot of anime films that are essentially just kind of like non-canonical little things that are made so you can make money and everything. Mm-hmm. Just not that great.
No.
I mean, some of them are okay, but I feel like the last two in particular were just not good at all.
No.
No. So let's dive into these production notes here real quick, or just the notes and trivia for this movie.
Okay.
This is the only film in which Miyoga does not appear, except in the credits.
Ah, we did note his absence.
This is the only film in which no scenes take place in the modern era.
Oh, okay.
This is the only film which doesn't end with Kagome saying, sit to punish Inuyasha. This is the only film that has the characters animated in a different design as compared to the other movies.
What different design?
I feel like the previous movies were kind of like
angular.
They had a different like kind of character design to them.
Oh, okay. I remember
this one was just
kind of angular.
This one was just kind of more like in line with how the television series has been.
That makes sense.
Let's see. I don't know. The four war gods, and is this the band of seven? It's the band of seven. Okay, the warm-hearted brotherly relationship between the four war gods is reminiscent of the band of seven. Rira,
warm-hearted?
Warm-hearted. Rira, the leader of the four war gods, has many similarities with Bankotsu, leader of the band of seven.
Okay, yeah, I could see that.
Kiora is similar to the character Suzaku from the series, because they are based off of the same thing.
Yep, they sure are.
During the final battle, Shippo says he can turn to a bow but not an arrow. This is a reference to at least two separate occasions during the Thunder Brothers arc and during the second film, both in which at a clinch moment, Shippo transformed into a bow so Kagome could help Inuyasha fight. In the castle beyond the Looking Glass, Horijima has the jeweled brooch of Horai as of wood right in... What the f*** is this sentence?
What?
As of wood right in Lake Shoji to free Princess Kaguya from the Mirror of Life. That's a terrible written sentence.
I don't even understand what they're trying to say there.
No idea. If you can figure that out, you're a smarter person than either of us.
Nothing makes sense there. No.
In this movie, Inuyasha uses the backlash wave twice without actually countering a demonic blast of yokai. However, how this is possible is unknown since the backlash wave is used to overpower it and return enemies blast with greater power. Similar to the rest of the Inuyasha franchise, several of the plot elements in this case, Horai Island, namely, are taken from real Japanese myth and lore and given a spin to coincide with the series. See the Wikipedia article here, which is very quick.
Wow.
Which is Horai in Japanese mythology, which is Mount Penglai, apparently. The legendary land of Chinese mythology and is known in Japanese mythology as Horai or Bonglai in Vietnam. There you go.
Yeah, there we go.
The credits suggest that Jokin was the one who ruined Kagome's bicycle, which we have talked about in one of the previous episodes, though Inuyasha mm-hmm. was blamed. That came up in mm-hmm. one of the notes pieces in a previous episode. Mm-hmm. And we talked about a little bit of this last week as well. Until Yashahime, this is David Kaye's last performance as Sesshomaru. The episode that follows the movie is the beginning of the final act in which Michael Dangerfield takes over. It is also Monica Story's final performance as Kagome, in which Kira Tozer takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Moroku once heard that the first emperor of the Qin Dynasty searched for Horai Island in his quest for eternal youth.
Which is
a very weird thing. He just like name drops that. It's like, okay.
All right. He is a learned man.
He's a monk.
He's a monk who does not ride with his seatbelt at all in this movie.
Yes.
Terrible.
One thing I did like about this film is that the fight with Sesshomaru and Kiora was mm-hmm. Both of those dudes were the voice actors of Wu Fei and Trace and Gundam Wing, who were both rivals in that series as well. So it was interesting to see these two voice actors against each other once again.
Oh, that's funny.
So that was fun.
That is fun. For you, anyway.
For me, at least. But yeah, that's Inuyasha the Movie 4. That is the final movie we have to watch. Which means next week it is time to dive into the final act. The final 26 episodes.
We're winding down.
Yeah. We'll be discussing episode 1 of that, Naraku's Heart, next week. And we'll be wrapping up Inuyasha. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, since we've finished up the movie and everything... How has this run through of Inuyasha, at least the original series, been for you to see it again all the way through this time?
I don't remember being as irritated by Kikyo
mm-hmm.
when I first watched it. But this time I'm just like, oh my god, like you're useless and what is the point? Like this love triangle shit is so annoying. So, you know, maybe I'm just too old for that now that I'm like, it's too complicated. I do think it still has some like charming moments and some really good episodes. But there are also parts that were like entirely forgotten and I probably will forget them again in like 6 months.
Yeah.
Because they're just not really notable. It is pretty funny that now I have a greater appreciation for like Sango and Moroku than I do for Inuyasha and Kagome because like they're just so complicated. They're so complicated.
Why'd you have to go and make things so complicated?
Why? I mean, like, I know Inuyasha is a dumb little kid, but he just annoys the shit out of me sometimes where he's like, oh, Kikyo. Like, guy, calm down. She's dead. She's dead. He is not going through the grief as he should. I guess because she's still walking around technically.
Yeah, it's kind of hard for him to do that when she's still just roaming.
Yeah, but it is also just weird that like, I don't know, the communication is pretty terrible at times between these characters, which I guess makes sense. But yeah, I still like it, but I definitely don't like it as much as I used to.
Okay.
What are your thoughts as a first time?
I think it's interesting. Like, you know, I watched some of this, like very little of it when it first aired on like Adult Swim, but way back in the day. But there are, like you said, there's some fun parts to the series. A lot of like the, like you said, the love triangle stuff is really dumb and just gets in the way of a lot of the show in general. There's just a lot of points I feel like throughout the original series where it just kind of spins its wheels a lot. Which kind of makes it feel like it's just going on and on and on. Quite a bit of filler, of course, which, you know, that's just kind of to be expected. But, you know, a lot of it's just kind of okay. It's whatever. And then, like we've talked about before, like, I kind of feel like Naraku's just not the best villain throughout this series, because like he just gets so many just chances to just like get out of any sort of anything bad happening to him. Just like he's got so many get out of jail free cards. Which I don't know if that's just a case of the fact that they have, you know, the series is long, or if they've had to like stretch things out or whatnot. But I think I'm really curious to see how they cram everything into 26 episodes, to finish it off, really. I think that's going to be the most curious part of this this whole thing.
Also, Shippo is still the best character.
He's a good boy.
He's a good boy. I love Shippo.
He's doing his best.
He's just doing his best. And, you know, he's a sassy little guy and often very right. But he's just a little guy. Yeah,
me. But yeah,
fine.
Well, we got 26 more episodes to figure out exactly how we feel about Inuyasha in totality.
So this one should be interesting, because last time I watched this, I was grading finals and drinking wine slushies. So this is gonna be a very very different experience for me this time.
For sure. So yeah, we will, next week we start the road to the end of Inuyasha with the first episode of the final act entitled Noraku's Heart. But that's going to do it for us this week. So if you'd like more from us, head on over to SeasonAnimeCheckup.com or SSC.co, where you can find past episodes of this podcast and other podcasts like Season Anime Checkup, OVA. Also find columns and reviews on the site as well. If you'd like more from AnnLadium, go to AnnLadium.com. She's got columns and reviews. You can follow us on Twitter and TikTok at Anime Checkup. Follow us on Blue Sky at SeasonAnimeCheckup.com. You can buy our books, One Shining Moment, A Critical Analysis of Love, Life, Sunshine, Hot Tubs, and Pac-Man on Amazon.com. And you can support us on Patreon, Patreon.com/SACOVA. So join us next time as we dive into the final act.
Ba-ba-bum.